welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 12, our big werewolf episode. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
A whole lot to cover today. Before we get into any of it, though, I wanted to make a small little announcement about the show going forward. We're a year in now, so this is our anniversary, basically.
Yeah.
And I just brought the idea up to you, Chris, about maybe expanding the genre a little bit to have like horror adjacent stuff if you want to pick them. You know, the idea being that we could pick stuff that's like thrillers or like action movies that have a lot of violence, or, you know, kind of cult and exploitation films that you wouldn't necessarily consider horror. I think a good example would be one movie we're going to talk about at the beginning here tonight, like Promising Young Woman. I wouldn't say that's a horror movie.
It's a thriller, though.
But, like, and it's like close. It's like, you know what I mean? It's close enough to the genre that I'm like, you know what? Just to give us a wider canvas to work on here.
And one of the ones that you mentioned to me was like Aliens, right? Like,
yeah,
not really a film we would cover here. We could do whatever the hell we want. It's our show.
Yeah.
like if we're following the rules, it doesn't really fall in, but we can now kind of like, if we expand it out, it fits in a little bit better.
And I was thinking, I'm like, you know, we kind of did that already with Altered States. I'd say that's more of a sci-fi, like.
Right.
But just to make it official that, you know, when there is a weird month selection where, you know, it's not horror, that's why. We're going to just include some stuff that, you know, is close enough to the genre. I think that fans of the genre will enjoy.
Yeah.
I'm not changing the description of our show or anything. We are still very much a horror podcast. And, you know, the stuff I have lined up right now, anyways, is still horror. But, you know, there might be a month down the line, maybe in the summer, you want to go for some action movies or something. We could do that. So I hope this doesn't bug anybody who listens to the show. Again, we're going to keep it stuff that's like, I think stuff that fans of the genre would like. So I think that covers that, right?
I think so.
If anyone is mad, send Chris your hate mail.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll take it.
All right. So, you know, before we get to our two werewolf movies tonight, you know, we're going to do our opening, what we've been watching. Like, dude, I have seen 30 movies since the last recording.
That's a lot.
Yeah. We're not going to cover them all. We're not even covering a fraction of them, but it makes us feel like it's been fucking a year since we recorded. I'm like, I've been through some shit. But I actually wanted to start off with a movie that you've seen and I have not. It's a movie I think that by the time this episode is out, everyone else will have seen. But just for my sake, because I don't want to be spoiled, what's your like non-spoiler thoughts on King Kong versus Godzilla? Godzilla versus King Kong. I don't even know.
Godzilla versus
Godzilla
versus Kong.
Just
Godzilla. I was going to call it Godzilla versus King Kong as well. It's just Godzilla versus Kong. You know, continuation of the Godzilla series of movies that Warner Brothers has been putting out with Godzilla and King of Monsters, and then also tying in Kong Skull Island into it as well. Starts out a little slow, you know, as these films sometimes do. Like, they got to lay some groundwork. Or why would these two be fighting or whatever? Which, who really cares ultimately? But, they flesh that out, and then once they start getting into big giant gorilla versus, you know, radiation dinosaur, it's fun. It delivers on, you know, the fight. There's a couple rounds of it actually, that kind of take place. And there is a definitive winner.
That makes me so excited. Is there like, is this like a wink wink thing? Like, yeah, there's a definitive winner, but, or are you like, for real, I'm going to walk away from this going, I can't believe they picked a winner. Like,
well, so there is a definitive winner, but there is a but, okay, right? Like, okay. And the but is that, you know, they want to make more King Kong movies. They want to make more Godzilla movies. So, yeah. And it actually, I think it works out because how they work it, like, hey, here's your winner. Something else happens. We're going to get something else. You know, there's more action that happens. Still big, giant monsters fighting. It's fun. It's good. Shit gets destroyed real, real well. The human stuff, as always, kind of, like, who cares? It's a little more goofy this time around, I think, which I think works.
I think that fits
for me.
Yeah.
Like, Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things is, she's pretty much like one of the stars here. There's two human storylines, and she is one of them. And it's her and, like, you know, her little hacker buddy and this conspiracy theorist who's older. And that all works. It's really funny. She's, you know, engaging. Her little buddy's engaging. Brian Tyree Henry, who plays the conspiracy theorist. He's really, like, he's funny in it. So, like, they have a good, you know, good chemistry going between the three of them. And then there's another human storyline with, like, Alexander Skarsgård and, you know, this other little girl. And that's the little girl you've seen in the trailers that, you know, talks to Kong. So there's, like, a storyline there as well. But yeah, it's all pretty dumb. But, like, this is a movie literally called Godzilla versus Kong. Like, you're going in expecting anything more than, like, giant monsters fighting each other. Like, you want some sort of emotional resonance from it, or you're not going to get that. Like, this is a giant monster movie where they destroy cities. It's a monster wrestling match, and it's a good one.
That's about all I need. I mean, I'm actually looking forward to this. Like, I'm not like a crazy fan of these movies, but I enjoy them. I did not like the last Godzilla one. I thought that was not good.
Too much serious human stuff.
It was just, I thought it was boring. Like, it was just, yeah, it was like all humans talking in a room, like, and like it just felt like I'm looking out windows at the cool stuff that I want to see happening outside. And like that plot of the last one, like, you know, I could swallow some ridiculous shit, but like the whole, like, we're doing terrorism, like we're unleashing monsters because, I mean, it's always like the stupid villain plan of like, we got to cleanse the earth or whatever, like, we gotta save the earth by killing the earth. But just like the whole, like, that Millie Bobby Brown's mom would be like in on it and then change her mind once she saw what they were doing. I was like, what?
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched that one, like, to prepare, but, like, good lord.
I was actually gonna go back and watch the Godzilla movies and, like, go back to, I don't think I've seen the original Godzilla in years.
Like the original, original? Like,
yeah, I think from the 50s. Yeah. I don't have a huge nostalgia for like the 60s and 70s movies of them. Like, I like these modern versions of them. They're fun. Yeah. I was going to go back and watch them, but, you know, time got the best of me. And and we, you know, I saw it 2 days early. Through, you know,
if you had plans to last minute, that's,
I was probably gonna watch them over like the next couple days, and oops, well, Godzilla vs. Kong here. Hey, and that screening's in 20 minutes, so
I'm sure it was fine.
Yeah, to speak on that though, that's a weird experience. Like, I've gone to press screenings before or like early screenings for fans. This was a weird one because, like, you get a code and then a link to, like, bring it up on your screen. And there's a watermark that moves around on the screen. Yeah. It's not noticeable for the most part, but, like, at the beginning, I was like, all right, there's, like, six numbers down in the bottom right corner. Oh, now they're in the middle. They kept moving around. But about halfway through, I was fine with it. It's a weird experience.
Are you going to redo it like when it's on HBO Max? Like, I'm assuming you watch this on like your laptop or something.
Yeah, I watch because like getting it set up on the Xbox, you watch it through a browser and you can just, you know, increase the
Yeah, yeah. Is that how you did it, or no?
No, so I was gonna watch it that way, but like getting that set up, and you have to log into your email, and like
this is like I saw the link, and I was like, I'm just gonna wait, because like, I was thinking about exactly that, like. So I want to watch it on my TV, but getting it all set up.
I watched it at the computer I'm at right now, like a 20 inch, computer monitor. It, you know, HD looks good. I have a decent sound system for my computer, but still, like, that's not the way I want to watch it. Also, that's not the way this movie would benefit from seeing on the big screen and in IMAX.
I hope it hangs around in the theaters a little bit.
That'd be nice. You're going to be, you'll be completely vaccinated very shortly. This is a movie though that I think would benefit from that. I love that HBO put it out there. And we're going to get to watch it. Everybody can watch it, but this is a big screen movie, and this is one of those ones where I'm watching and going like, this would look awesome, sound awesome on the big screen. And I miss that experience.
And at the very least, like, HBO does really good with their sound on HBO Max. At least, I don't know. It seems like a lot of movies I watch are Atmos sound. And like, dude, just fucking rock my soundbar.
Yep.
Well, I'm excited to see it. Happy to hear there's a definitive winner and that it's fun. I guess I'll have more thoughts. We maybe talk about it a little bit more when we do our May episode. You know what? I know some of the other stuff you've seen, and this is what I've seen. Zack Snyder's Justice League, Chris, speaking of HBO Max.
Yeah.
What do you think of this? Yeah, it's a movie and a half. It's two movies.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's one movie. It's 4 hours.
Yes.
It is split up into really digestible parts, though. Did you sit down and watch the entire thing all at once?
No, I did 2 hours one night and 2 hours the next.
So I've actually been watching it like as I work, like in chunks.
Because of like chapter breaks. Like,
yeah, and it works great for that. This is great. Yeah. This is solid. It's
great television.
It's great television. It's great fun television. Like this is better. This is better than The Boys. It's better than WandaVision or anything I've so far I've seen on Falcon and Winter Soldier. Not that those are bad. Like I think they're solid. You know, TV as well for this type of genre. But this is, you know, this has the big names. Like this has Batman. It has Superman. Wonder Woman. And it has the big name actors with it, Ben Affleck and, you know, Gal Gadot and Henry Cavill. This isn't, not to say that like what Marvel is putting on Disney Plus is not top tier.
Well, like, you know, I mean, they are kind of side characters, right?
Right.
Like,
it's not Thor. It's not Chris Hemsworth. Like it's their side characters. It's their, you know, and that's perfectly fine. This is the big deal. Like these are the big characters, and being able to watch it in like 40-minute chunks or half hour chunks, however long they vary, was really cool. Like, and it's like, this works. Like I watched for, and they definitively end. Like they come up to a, you know, goes to black, chapter break comes up part two.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So like works really well in that way. And I found it easily digestible. I don't know if I would have sat through 4 hours of it straight, but
yeah, I don't know. You know me, I'm not like super into these like superhero movies. So like the thought of sitting in a theater and watching a 4 hour like I don't think I would do it. I don't think I would be interested enough, but since it, you know, it was free on HBO Max, I checked it out. I can't compare it to the theatrical because I never really saw that. And so I think that's like the most interesting thing about this is being able to compare it to that. And I just couldn't because I hadn't seen it and I wasn't going to do 2 hours of theatrical and 4 hours.
I'm going to tell you just from my opinion, you've seen the best version of this. Like,
yeah, that's what it's so funny. It's so weird how we got here. But those crazy Snyder fans, I guess, we're fucking right. Like, all the critics kind of agreed too that, like, even the critics that didn't really dig Justice League, like this new one or whatever, like, all said it was like an improvement over the original theatrical release. It's hilarious.
Yeah, because it is funny to see, like, you know, whether you like Zack Snyder or not, like, he had a vision for what he wanted Justice League to be. Yeah. And when, you know, he met with Family Tragedy while filming Justice League, and they, you know, he had to leave the project, and they brought in Joss Whedon, and he made it, like, a lot of this film is the same, but Joss Whedon added, like, Whedonisms.
He marveled it up.
He did. He marveled it up a little bit. There's a little bit more jokes. That's not to say that this is devoid of humor.
No, there's jokes in it.
It's just not, like, I think they fit here. Like, they're not, yeah. they feel in character, whereas Whedon's jokes are a little, maybe don't necessarily fit. Yeah, I think this one works a whole lot better, except for maybe the half hour Return of the King ending that sets up things that are never going to happen.
I mean, we could talk spoilers on this film because it's out. People have seen it.
Yeah.
You know, if you care about it, you've seen it. I thought there was, like, this a lot of hype about the Joker and Batman scene at the end. Like, I saw an article saying, like, fans think this is the best scene between Joker and Batman ever. And so, like, crazy. I was really looking for, what did you say?
Anybody that said that is crazy.
Okay, yeah. I was really looking forward to that scene because of that, and that was a bizarre scene. What the fuck was that? Like, I thought it was a terrible note to go out on.
Yeah, well...
Like, what the fuck was that? I'm so really talking about how he's going to give Batman a reach around. I was like, he didn't say that.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, I don't hate Jared Leto's Joker. It's a weird take on it.
I mean, I thought it was cooler here than I think I saw Suicide Squad, and, like,
yeah, and that's the one people,
it's a little hate, different, like, here.
You know. And yeah, it's like, he has definitely more the I wouldn't say classic Joker, but the Joker you kind of expect.
Yeah,
and this,
like, this crazy gangster, like, yeah, I don't know.
Like, he's straight up, he is crazy. He's a crazy clown man in this. But yeah, like, it's weird. Like, that whole thing, it does tie back to Batman versus Superman.
It's, like, bringing back the worst part, I thought, of Batman versus Superman. Like, this nonsensical dream thing. Like, it's just like,
and it was another dream thing.
Yeah, it was just like, we're going back to this stupid dream after, like, the whole crew came together here. Why are we going back to this, like, Superman's evil dream? Like, it's fucking, it was bizarre.
But. Yeah, and I guess the reasoning for that is, like, Snyder had, like, you know, he had plans for Justice League 2 and 3, and, like, yeah, it involves, you know, Lois dying and Superman going legit
ape shit again.
Like, yeah, yeah, so, like, I get what he's going for there, but it's like, you're never going to make those movies. Marvel's not, DC's not going to let you make those movies. Warner Brothers not going to let you make those movies. Why put this in? It's some nonsense to stir up fans. It's just dumb. And then they introduced Martian Manhunter. Like, that's some big thing. Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, I guess, like, that works as a stinger if you're going to make more of these. But you're not, like, you're not part of the franchise anymore. You're kind of off.
These fans don't seem satisfied. They're just going to keep coming at these people.
Yeah. Like, whatever. I don't care. Yeah, you're not a big superhero fan. No. Anyway. Like, I like Ben Affleck as Batman.
Yeah, he's good.
I like Henry Cavill as Superman. I don't like Superman. I think Jack Snyder's Superman is cool. Like, Man of Steel is good. I like him in Batman versus Superman. I like him here in Justice League. Like, he's a badass.
I get, like, I understand people's, like, objection to Superman in the Snyder movies, but I'm kind of with you. Like, I dig it. I liked Man of Steel. I still think that's, like, one of my favorite, like, superhero movie, like, modern superhero movies.
Yeah.
This is, like, Justice League is, like, my least favorite type of superhero story, and that's the one where it's, like, we gotta get the band together, because like there's this crazy alien superpower guy that like is collecting all these gems, or in this movie it's boxes, and you know, it's gonna end the world. I always like, you know, can we do something like there's a guy that wants to rob a bank or whatever? Like, you know what I mean? Like, like that's what I loved about The Dark Knight, is because like it was just Joker trying to spread a little chaos. Like there was no like end of the world type thing happening in it. You know, right. What I mean?
It's legitimately low stakes, even if it's like on a grand scale in that city. But it's really just one crazy guy who's being a terrorist and getting away with it.
Yeah, like it makes it feel more connected to reality, you know?
Yeah.
But like, I think that this Zack Snyder's Justice League, it kind of alleviates some of the problems I have with those movies, in that they always feel super bloated to me because they're juggling all these characters and they're like, we have to jump from this to this to that to get the movie told in 2 hours and 20 minutes. Given that 4 hour runtime, I felt like let it breathe a little, and it made me enjoy it more.
Like you get introduced to Arthur Curry, who's Aquaman, and like you get a little bit more than just that one scene from the original movie, where and then he decides he's going to join. Same with like Cyborg and Flash, they're actual characters now, and you kind of understand their motivations, what their issue, what their powers are, even.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you're like over an hour into this, or I think it's almost 2 hours, and then like they're like, no, we're gonna spend time now introducing these characters. I think the other thing that helps, and this is, I kind of tried to make this point on Twitter, I don't know if anyone got what I was trying to say, but like at the very least, the Snyder superhero films like have an identity, like they're like, it's someone's idea of what these movies should be, instead of, you know, Marvel movies to me feel very generic and like assembly line and cookie cutter. At the very least here, it's messy. It's not perfect. And again, not my favorite type of superhero story, but like he's trying to do this kind of epic thing about gods, basically. And that's more interesting to me than this like prepackaged thing that you know what you're going to get exactly out of with the Marvel movies. Sorry to shit on the Marvel movies. But, you know, anyone that knows me from Twitter or listens to our podcast for years knows I just don't like them.
I'm with you on this. Like, I like the Marvel movies for what they are, but they're popcorn filler, right? Yeah. Like, they're 2.5 hour TV shows. And it's funny because I compared this to a TV show, the way it's edited and cut. But yeah, there's something more grand and epic to what Snyder's doing here. And it's a singular vision, right? And that's not to say Marvel doesn't have a singular vision, but theirs is very much.
You wouldn't see Marvel do 4x3.
So
what did you think of that? Did it bug you? It bugs me. Like I hate it when movies do it. But
at the beginning it did, but then like as the movie wears on, like, you know, your eyes just kind of focus on what's happening on the screen. But yeah, it's so fucking choice. Weird, man. It's so weird.
Like, I think it's an odd choice, but it goes to like the point I was trying to make. It's like you're making choices, at least. Like you have a way that you want to do this, and it's interesting to see a filmmaker get to do that. So, you know,
and I do like for me, like it doesn't work because I'm watching this at home on, you know, on a TV or on a laptop. So that aspect ratio doesn't work for what he wants. I get why he wanted it, right? Like it's closer to how IMAX projects, and he wanted it big. He wanted it more vertical, and that's cool, except it looks smaller on my fucking screen because it's cutting off, you know, a third on each side. So whatever.
Yeah.
I like it though. I don't know. I'm not opposed to like the Snyder fans being assholes and getting more of it. but if we don't, whatever. This was an interesting thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will admit, I do really dig at least the first Wonder Woman. I dig her in this. Not great acting, but you know, she's cute. I guess more than cute.
She's hot.
Yeah,
fucking hot. And
the music, her theme is so cool.
So like, good.
I really like Superman's theme too. That's kind of carried through the series from Man of Steel. Like, mm-hmm. I really like that. Like somber.
There's a consistency, right? Yeah. Like, I know one of the things like I really like about, you know, they show Wonder Woman being powerful. Like for years, I've always been like, who the fuck cares about Wonder Woman, right? Because she's just a chick, right? Like I, unless you like read the comics.
Yeah, really I have no idea how powerful she is. About her. Yeah, yeah.
Like this, like actually lays out. She's a demigod. Like she's super fucking powerful. She's like borderline on par with Superman.
Well, that was kind of neat about like these superheroes coming together. Like in this one, it's like they are Aquaman's basically a god. You know, she's basically a god. And then you have Batman.
Which is still the best line in that fucking movie. Exactly. Yeah. I love it. It's so good. And like his delivery is great. Like just
dude, he fucking gets owned by fucking Superman when Superman wakes up. Like
could have
fucking completely incinerated him. Yeah, I don't know. Again, it surprised me that I liked it as much as I did. I'd still say out of the Snyder movies here, I like Man of Steel the best.
I know
Snyder didn't do it, but I did enjoy Patty Jenkins' original Wonder Woman. I don't know what happened with the sequel. That was not good.
It was a mess.
Anyways, that's enough about that. Again, I thought surprisingly good, like which is about as good as you're going to get from me. So good job, Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
Another movie that we both saw. And I'm pretty excited about this one. You can't really do spoilers, but Promising Young Woman. Chris, I guess one way to start this conversation is, would you expect this movie to be nominated for Best Picture?
Absolutely not. get this out, I liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a traditional Oscar nominated film though.
It's interesting because like the movie is both, it's way more intelligent and ambitious than I thought based on the trailer. Like when I saw the trailer last winter before like when the theater shut down and stuff, I was not expecting much out of the movie. I was like, that looks fun. It looks goofy. Like, you know, they're messing with, you know, this kind of hot button issue, but like it looked like a throwaway thriller that no one would remember in a month. Well,
yeah, like I didn't read really a whole lot. I saw the trailer for it. I'm like, this looks cool. She's a serial killer that goes to bars and kills. Not what this fucking movie is at all.
Yeah,
like that. You know that her going and picking up dudes and tricking them into thinking she's drunk and then exacting some revenge on them is there, but I don't think she's a serial killer. Like it does not seem that she is like committing any crimes.
No. I can't talk spoilers on it. Maybe we'll do an episode about it one day, but like, I can't say what I want to say.
Yeah. We can't go too deep, but yeah, it is different than what you expect if you watch that trailer.
It is both way more ambitious than I expected, but also it's still very much an entertaining thriller. Like it's not the type of movie that you would expect to be nominated for Best Picture.
No. And holy shit on that ending. Like,
yeah,
not an ending I was expecting. So,
if you've not seen the trailer for this, the setup that they give away in the trailer is that this woman played by Carey Mulligan, she goes to bars pretending to be blackout drunk, and it's a trap. That's basically what the trailers show you. But and it is both very much that movie, but also it's I think a very kind of well written drama about this woman who's been through some horrible stuff in her past. You know, it's a movie about rape culture, especially how things were versus how they are now. Maybe part of it is also you know, it's about characters who were acted terribly when they were younger and are now facing some sort of repercussions from that. I don't know. I just like really loved the movie. I wish you could say more. I guess non-spoilery, it kept surprising me where it was going, and I wasn't sure where it was going. There's a part where it's like, is this going to become like a romantic like comedy? Like, you know, like it kind right. of bears yeah, into that territory yeah. for a while. Or not so much romantic comedy, but just kind of like a romance about two people falling in love.
I was wondering for a hot minute if like, is that how they're going to get over her trauma? Like, you know, she falls in love yeah. with this guy, and like that's how they move away from this. And
so it keeps kind of like flipping the script on you. Bo Burnham plays her like kind of love interest in this, and I found, without saying spoilers, I found his character very surprising and interesting. I kind of thought about his character for a couple days after. Like, again, can't say, but like, there's kind of a turn with him, and yeah. I thought he's very good in the role.
Yeah, and it is one of those things where it's like, yeah, we can't say a whole lot here.
It's hard to talk about.
hard to talk around, but yeah, it's a, you know, as you said, it's about rape culture. It's kind of about like this Me Too movement and, you know, empowerment and how we look at rape culture, and how we should look at rape culture. There's an interesting scene. Maybe a third of the way through, with Christopher Mintz-Plasse. He plays this guy, Neil. And it's great. Just like the way that she kind of like explains, you know, what she's doing.
Yeah.
It's very well done there. And that's kind of the core of the movie. And that's kind of her... Not she's not a superhero, but that's kind of like her mission statement for what she's mm-hmm. doing to these people. And it does play out through everything, through all the people she interacts with, all the way up to yeah. the end. So,
and the stuff with, like, I hate to keep going back to this, but it's like, I could almost put myself in Bo Burnham's shoes. And I'm like, what would you do?
Right.
Like, what would you do to protect your reputation, your freedom, possibly? Like, you know, like it's, I don't know. I found the movie, you know, it's very entertaining and it gives you a lot to think about. It's definitely a movie, it reminded me, I don't think this is too much of a spoiler to say, but it reminded me of Hard Candy, where it was like, it's about a very serious issue. Like, that movie's about pedophilia. This is about rape. And it's both like, it wants a reaction out of you. Like, this Promising Young Woman will get a reaction out of you. But it also wants to be entertaining at the same time. And I kind of love that ballsiness to it. Some people won't like it because of that. Some people think it should be all very serious and adult and not give you like some of the payoffs and stuff that happened in this. I've seen people who got mad at it because every man in it is presented as like a rapist, and it's just, to me, it's like,
I don't necessarily find that accurate though. Like, I don't think Bo Burnham's character is rapey.
No, I think he's actually kind of a good guy. I think right. he is
He has skeletons in his closet too.
Yeah.
Not that he did anything wrong. What he did do something wrong. Yeah. But just the way like he reacted to something, is everyone has things they aren't proud of from their past. Yeah. They might not have been the culprit, but it's how you deal with things after that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this movie kind of feels like a reckoning for, you know, everything that, like, the way culture used to be, you know, it's like we're starting to deal with the way culture was and the way it's changing. And But it just, it cracks me up. The people that get mad about the politics of this are the same people that will, like, watch a right-wing film, like, Dragged Across Concrete and say, well, I don't need a movie to throw my politics back at me. I don't need them to regurgitate what I think. But then all of a sudden they're mad at this because, you know, the men aren't properly displayed or whatever, depicted or whatever. Like, I don't know. I stick by my guns on that notion that I don't expect the movie to give me my politics back to me. And I think a right-leaning film could be interesting. A left-leaning film could be interesting. I think this movie was endlessly interesting. And just to touch on the ending without spoiling anything, I the balls of what it did to its main character here.
Yeah.
I was just like, holy shit. Like, my jaw was on the floor.
And the implications,
and then it gives you some satisfaction after that. But like,
right? But the implications of what happened, that, like,
yeah,
holy shit, they're saying nothing changes.
Yeah, they're saying this is okay. So see, you were on my wavelength with this movie. They're like, as soon as something started to happen, I was like, oh wait, we're really going in this direction, and I'm like, this movie is saying that, no, this is how the world is. And I'm like, that is a fucking ballsy statement for, like, what is essentially an entertaining thriller.
Yeah.
Make. And then it lets you have your cake and eat it, too, because there is, like, a final comeuppance moment.
That, oh, and it's, you know, it's satisfying. It's so well done.
But so you kind of get both. And I can see people getting mad at the movie for letting you have your cake and eat it, too. But I just, it made me just love it more. Like, I really enjoyed. So
yeah, agreed.
I guess high recommendation from both of us on Promising Young Woman, and I'm rooting for it at the Oscars. I don't think it stands a chance. It would be pretty neat if Carrie Mulligan won, though. She was really great in it.
Agreed. Yeah, I don't think that it's like it's one of those things where it's an honor to be nominated.
yeah, it's just insane even that it got nominated. Yeah. You know. What else have you seen, Chris? I know you had some other stuff you wanted to touch on.
I'll touch on one other one. We're running a little long here.
Yeah, I kind of felt this happening.
I watched a movie called Jumbo. Have you heard of this?
I've not. I saw that you like rated it on Letterboxd, but I had never heard of it before that.
So it is a French language film. It's a drama, comedy, romance type thing. I'm going to lay out the premise here for you, though. So it's this kind of like socially awkward girl, Jean, and she works at an amusement park, like really socially awkward, can't, like, doesn't have good relationships with other people. And she falls in love with this amusement park ride who she thinks is talking to her. And then as the movie progresses, like, you see that it is interacting with her to a point of, like, weird sexualness. where there is a scene where oil is being shot at her and all over her face. And it's weird, man. Like, that stuff's weird. But then it's also, you know, underneath it, there is this, you know, her family doesn't understand her relationship with this thing, you know, because it's hard to understand. But that becomes like this allegory for accepting people and their sexuality, and it as a parent. And it's really nice. Like, it's super touching, the way her mother comes around. They have a wedding with the fucking amusement park ride at the end. It's super fucking weird, but also super touching and, like, really, really, like, gut-wrenching and heartwarming. It's a strange movie, but I kind of liked it quite a bit.
Is this a rental or?
Yeah, I rented it. So, like, it was at Toronto Film Fest last year, and I saw a review from somebody.
This is going to be my next question. I'm like, okay, how did Chris?
Yeah, how did I come across this one? So I follow a film blog, Assholes Watching Movies, and the one writer there, Jay. She saw it at Toronto Film Fest last year, virtually. And she was like, this seems fucking weird, right up my alley. I need to see this. And it just hit streaming. So I was like, I got to watch it. And it delivered for me. Like, it was, right, it was everything. Like, I was like, yes, this is fucking weird. Great performance from the main character, from the main actress, Naomi Merlant, who is, I don't know if you've seen Portrait of a Lady on Fire. That's what she's best known for. Good performance from her. Also a good performance from the person who played her mom. I'm not sure who that was, but good performance by both of them. And just the weirdness of it really kind of clicks. So
have you seen Portrait of a Lady on Fire?
I did not.
You should watch it. It's fucking great. Yeah, I'll probably see this. I like anything that involves amusement parks. So I'm interested in it. I was just like, where did Chris see this? You know?
It's a very weird thing. If you come out of it going, dude, you're a fucking freak, that's fine. I mean, like, I'm down with that.
I have seen very weird films in my journey, so I'm sure I'll be okay. Interesting.
So, I saw that Raya and the Dragon.
Dragon.
That was nice. I liked it. Very good Disney film. Probably my favorite movie of the year so far, like of new films. But not much to say there.
Yeah.
Like, it's $30 on Disney Plus. Wait a couple months and it'll be free.
Yeah. So. You know what? I would say my favorite movie of the year so far is, it's kind of a cheat, but Promising Young Woman wasn't really available anywhere until this year.
Yeah, it released the 25th of December. Yeah. So like we really didn't get it till now. So.
Yeah. But I don't know what it would be if not that. I guess I'd have to think about it, but I guess for me, again, I've seen a bunch of other stuff, but we'll just touch on just one or two that I think are, you know, very briefly. There's a movie called Hunter Hunter, and it stars Devon Sawa from, you know, Final Destination.
Yep.
And Nick Stahl. It's like two actors that have not been around in a long time. This is like a straight-to-video movie. Devon Sawa plays a, like, survivalist type. Like, he fucking moved his family to this cabin in the woods type shit, and they're, like, living off the land. It's like one of those setups.
Okay,
and,
yep.
They start, like, a wolf starts kind of, like, encroaching on their territory there, and I guess that's, like, a very bad thing. And so he goes out to hunt the wolf, and very bad things happen. Just leave it at that. And surprisingly good for straight-to-video. It's cool to see these actors again. I like both of them, especially, like, Devon Sawa. And this is like kind of a slow burn, but holy shit, it builds to, like, the ending is one of the most crazy fucking endings you'll ever see. Extremely violent and gory. So, like, if you're a horror fan, it's worth checking out literally for just like the last 10 minutes. It's like top tier, like fucking Bone Tomahawk level gore happening in the last 10 minutes of this. So, pretty cool, like cool, neat little surprise to it. And you know, the movie's okay. But I guess it's kind of slow and it built, and then it just goes insane at the end.
Nice.
And that one, I was going to rent it too. I was like waiting for it to drop to rental prices or something, or I finally was going to get around to renting it. It had disappeared off of Amazon. Like, it was buy only. I was like, what the fuck? Why is it buy only now? Anyways, it's back to, you can rent it on Amazon, but you can also watch it for free on Hulu. So,
okay.
You know, if you got Hulu and you're a horror fan, I'd say, again, just for like literally the last 10 minutes.
It's only a 90 minute movie too. So
yeah. I guess I'll just throw one more horror recommendation out there. The Dark and the Wicked, I thought was pretty good. It came to Shudder finally for free, if you have Shudder. It's a new film from the director of The Strangers. Totally different deal, though. It's like supernatural, like demon in a house type deal. Pretty good, though, I thought. I'll slip in one more before we get started, and that is, there's a movie called The Kid Detective, which is, I think, rent only right now. It stars Adam Brody. It's about a guy who used to be a detective when he was a kid, and he would solve, like, really stupid, like, who stole the lunch money type things.
Yeah.
But now he's an adult, life's not working out great for him, and he gets a murder case. And it's a good, like... good, like, if you like those noir-type movies, like detectives trying to solve a case, I think it's a good one of those. And, like, the actual mystery itself has some cool twists and turns, and kind of, like, just an awesome little kind of under-the-radar movie. But it's rental only right now, but I'd say it's, you know, if you like those types of movies, it's a pretty safe bet. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
That one sounds pretty good.
I'll just leave it at that. Otherwise, we'll be here for like 3 hours discussing
everything else you've seen.
Yeah, yeah. So I say let's get into the main attraction here.
All right.
So I had the picks this month. I get to host this, present these movies. We're going to start, and I chose two werewolf movies. These are actually my two favorite werewolf movies.
Okay.
And we're going to start with the one that we had both seen before, and then move backwards. So we're going to start with Dog Soldiers.
One of the most explosive, brutal, and purely enjoyable horror debuts since The Evil Dead. Genuinely frightening. Jaws, Aliens, and Predator with a werewolf twist.
Come on!
Absolutely brilliant.
Ah!
Thrilling.
Mind your tongue!
Exciting. Scary.
I don't scare that easy.
And funny.
I'm sold.
A horror film with bite.
You are.
Salt! I'm in the palms of it!
A bitch of a werewolf movie.
My dad!
Dog Soldiers. It'll blow your house down.
Written, directed, and edited by Neil Marshall, who, for a time there, like after this, he did, The Descent?
He did The Descent right after this, yeah.
And it just seemed like this was like a guy to watch. His career is strange. It seems like it just never really took off like it should have. But this is kind of like one of his, this might be, I don't know if it's his first movie, but it's
his first feature length, yeah.
Okay. And Dog Soldiers has kind of an interesting release history, too. So it came out May 20th, 2002 in the UK. It had a budget of £2 million, I guess pounds would be...
roughly yeah. 3 million US.
Yeah. And did a box office of 5 million in the UK. Didn't get a proper US release. And I don't know if you remember this, like when I was reading up on this, I was like, oh yeah, that is how that happened. So Dog Soldiers in the US went straight to the Sci-Fi Channel. Huh. But then it got like buzz, like it was getting like positive reviews and you know, if you didn't see it on the Sci-Fi Channel, it became aware. Like, if you were a horror fan, you became aware of it. And once it came out on DVD and stuff, it kind of became kind of like this like little sleeper hit among the horror community. It came out in the U.S. on DVD in November of 2002. I don't know when it exactly premiered on the Sci-Fi Channel. I cannot remember if it was like right around then or earlier in the year, but I do remember that being the case. It's an interesting thing, too, because it's kind of why it's hard to find a good version of this today.
Yeah, it's tough.
Well, yeah, it's very hard to, like, I picked a movie that is just currently not, like, streaming on much.
It actually would have been, I probably would have got a better version of it just to buy, like, a DVD of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What did you watch it on?
Popcorn Flicks.
Okay. He said it was like just chopped up real bad, like ads and shit. Like,
don't watch movies on Popcorn Flicks. That's what I will say.
Well, and here's the interesting thing about it. So I think it might be partially due because it like had such a limited release originally. It's like I own the Shout Factory Blu-ray of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the collector's edition. At the time that they made that, they worked with the best stuff they could find. So this is from Wikipedia. The original negative wasn't located at the time of making the Shout Factory release, and Shout Factory had to rely on two original cinema prints whose visual qualities are limited. So, like, that's how hard it was to get a proper print of the film, is that Shout Factory, who does, like, premium Blu-ray releases,
yeah,
they're like, this is the best that we could do. That's what they put out. It's like some original, like finding the original elements and the original stuff was kind of lost. I guess in the years since I bought that that Shout Factory release, here we go. On March 14th, 2019, the original negative finally located. With the original negative finally located, the German company Koch Media released the movie on video in a package including the movie, restored in 4K from the negative, and it's actually been released by a couple other of these small shops. Like another 4K restoration came out in 2020 from Vertigo Releasing, and Second Sight Films, another one of these like, you know, small boutique Blu-ray places, put out Dog Soldiers in February of 2021. So you could get now a good quality version of it, but as recently as a couple of years ago when I bought the collector's edition of Dog Soldiers, it was hard to get one without imperfections. Kind of interesting history.
Yeah.
There. So anyways, Dog Soldiers, it's we ran down like who made it and all that. It has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 79%. An IMDb of 6.8, Letterboxd rating of 3.4. And this is basically a soldiers versus werewolves movie.
Sure.
Yeah,
that's how I would describe it.
Yeah. Kind of. I've seen people say it's kind of like the werewolf version of Predator, which I could kind of see. It's an okay. Interesting, like mashup of genres. I think it's like the small war drama mixed with a werewolf horror movie. Would you say that's like accurate?
Yes.
Yeah. So, anyways, we'll run through it. Starts off. There's opening in Scotland, and there's like a couple that's camping, and they get murdered.
That's a good scene.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like it's like you're like, it lets you know what you're watching. Like,
yeah, it's you know, it's a schlock right here. Right,
yeah. Now.
But I love the scene. Just he's they're going at it in the tent, and he's unzipping her snowsuit or whatever it is, and he gets to like the bottom of the crotch, and like that's where the zipper stops. But then the zipper noise keeps going.
Yeah, it's like the werewolf
opening. Yeah, the werewolf opening the door. And it's such a great scene because, like, you can see how they wouldn't know. And then they both, like, kind of stare at why is the zipper noise still going.
You get a I think the guy or whatever reaches for, like, a silver letter opener here, which is
yep. Kind of
like the checkoff gun in this. So you're like,
yeah,
right, coming back.
Yep.
We cut to 2 hours earlier, and it's some like soldier, like elite soldier training exercise thing. They capture this guy. They tell like the commander here tells this guy to kill a dog. He refuses to do it, and so he gets kicked out of this group. And then it goes to like 4 weeks later, where like the guy that got kicked out is on another, like, I think they're like on a training mission, right? Like, they're doing something, like, they're basically training for combat, right?
Yes, they're some sort of elite force, and yeah, and then they're
but then there's a higher elite force that he got kicked out of.
Yep. Yeah.
Like,
so he's like basically trying to get into the Navy SEALs of the British forces here or whatever. And he's like, nope, you wouldn't kill the dog. You're out.
Yeah. Yeah. Which also, like, I mean, I guess that right away gets you on the side of the one guy and against the other guy. It's yep. Like, fuck that. I ain't killing a dog, you know, like, crazy. And that also, I guess, if you think about it, kind of makes sense later when you find out what the elite group was doing, I guess. But anyways, so then it's like, yeah, like, these guys are in Scotland where we saw, like, the camping people get killed. They're out there training. The elite group that he got kicked out of is there too, I guess, but they're not aware of that.
Right.
Just trying to run through the story here. You get some good, like, camaraderie scenes with these guys. Like, there's like a part where they're like sitting around a campfire telling stories. Kind of reminds me of that, like, part in Saving Private Ryan where like it slows down, like they're spending the night in the church and they're just talking, and you kind of get to know the guys.
Yep.
Like, the movie has that, like, war drama feel, I think, more than like the werewolf type thing. Like, even when, you know, we'll get into it later, like when the werewolves show up and it's very much like an action horror movie, it definitely feels more to me like an action movie with werewolves or something, you know?
Yeah, it happens to be werewolves, but you could have thrown any sort of adversary against these guys and it would have played out similarly.
Yeah.
Like they're a trained military force, like, and they do that well.
And that is, like, I think that's what Neil Marshall, I think I read that in like an interview, that's what he was going for. He's like, I wanted to do basically a war movie and like just the bad guys just so happen to be werewolves. Like, he's, yeah, like, that's what I wanted it to feel. In this new group, I personally really like this guy, their new sergeant. What is it? Played by Sean Pertwee.
Sergeant Wells.
Is it Sergeant Wells?
Sergeant Harry Wells.
I don't know about you. I found this guy, like, very convincing as that type of, like, soldier guy.
Yeah.
And I think he, like, between him and our main character, Cooper, I think that they make the movie work. Like, their performances, along with, like, the dramatic music that plays in this movie, it's very good. It feels like out of, like, a dramatic war film. It, like, lends some, it, like, makes it feel like this. This is, like, a low-budget movie. This is all smoke and mirrors, and I think that the score really, like, kind of sells what's going on here. I don't know. I don't know if you noticed that or if you thought that. Like, the music feels very dramatic, and it, like, swells, oh, yeah, when stuff's going down. And I think that's, like, what that, and then again, like, Cooper and Wells, I think, I don't know. You just kind of, like those guys as it goes along.
Yeah.
You cut to the other group, like the elite group, and basically everyone gets fucking murdered right away. You don't really see what happens. You just see, like, blood and stuff, but, and then, like, our heroes, our good guys, find the bad commander guy from the beginning of the movie. They find him all fucked up.
Yeah, he's injured.
Blood everywhere, body parts everywhere.
This kind of puts them into, like, oh shit, like, there are actual enemies out here. This isn't a training exercise.
Yeah, they realize they're in a live combat situation. I think the bad commander, I keep calling him bad commander, somewhere in my notes I'll have his actual name, but he, I think, says they're on a mission to find wolves. Or I don't know if he like really says, but he's like, there was only supposed to be one. He says that at some point.
I thought that was later. Maybe it is early on.
It is. I think when they find him, he says something like, there was only supposed to be one. Like, I don't think he tells them exactly what's going on. That's not known until later. But he does mention there was only supposed to be one. And you're kind of like, what does that mean? And, you know, it leads to the revelation later that we'll get to. They take, live weapons and ammo off of these elite soldiers who've just been wasted. But their commander says to them, he's like, it's not going to matter. Like, you're just going to get shredded. These bullets and shit are not going to work.
Right. Which, you're the elite force. And yeah, your guys are just ripped apart. Like, what makes you think that these hucks are going to be able to do anything?
Kind of a goofy kill in here where this guy gets spooked and runs into a tree branch and like impales himself on it.
It looks great for what it is, super gory, but also I don't know, I've run into shit before.
Like, I don't think that's how that works, right?
That went all the way through him. Like, you'd have to be running like Flash level speed. I don't know. I've run into shit like in a forest where like you don't see. Like, yeah, it may impale you, but not to the point where it goes all the way through your body. Like, it's a little absurd.
Yeah, it is goofy. But also the like good commander here gets attacked. What did you say? Wells was his name?
Sergeant Wells. Yep. Yeah.
He gets attacked. And his fucking guts are hanging out. And we get this in this part, we get like one of the few things that has like stuck in my head all these years. One of the soldiers just tries to stuff his guts back into it. Like, his like intestines are like hanging out and you see it all. And he just tries to like stuff them all back into the dude. Like, that's one another thing that like I find hard to buy. I guess they explain it later, but like, how is this dude alive?
Right.
But like, the part that I always remember is this soldier trying to stuff his guts back in, and the dude's like, they're not gonna fit. Like, I don't know why it stuck with me all these years. They kind of like run away from the area, and this girl in a truck lets them all hop in. She takes them to some farmhouse. This is about 35 minutes into the movie, and it's kind of where we're gonna spend the rest of the movie, is on this. I think it was a set that they made.
Yeah, it's in this house or whatever.
Yeah, but like, I think full set. Then I don't know if because you get to see it blown up later. I don't know if they did a miniature to do that or if they actually just blew up the set. But like, you know, this is a low budget movie. You basically have to get these guys holed up in a place where they're gonna be under siege through the rest of the movie to keep it, you know, low budget. They decide to like take some long drive to get out of there to save the injured commander, but there's wolves outside. So instead they just blow up their truck, which just seems like a bad idea. And then like from there, it's like pretty action packed for big chunks of it. Like, there's like, they get attacked by wolves trying to come in over and over.
Yep.
Woman, go ahead, Chris.
Multiple attacks, and that the farmhouse is multiple floors, so they do some things, you know, where it's like, oh, we're getting attacked down here. Oh crap, upstairs.
They're coming in through the upstairs window and stuff. Like, I don't know, pretty cool stuff though.
Yeah, it's fun.
The woman seems to know what they're dealing with, and she's like, "I thought you guys were here to help." they go upstairs to patch the Sarge up with super glue. In a scene that I like really love, just lots of fun banter between them as they're like going to do this. Like, this part where the Sarge asks Cooper to hit him, and Cooper punches him. and it doesn't quite knock him out. So Sarge is like, don't be a pussy, hit me. Like, I don't know. I found that scene fun. What other kind of drama happens in here? They tie up Captain Ryan, the bad guy, up to a chair, and they're trying to get him to talk.
He finally kind of reveals that he knows what's up. But before that, before they move Sergeant Wells upstairs, there's this funny scene where there's Megan, the lady here, she has a dog, and the dog is he bites at the intestines and is dragging them.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
and it's like, get off of me, give me that back. While like they're being attacked, like, so it's this kind of absurd thing, like they're in this dire situation where they're being attacked and this dog is just like trying to have himself some sausage.
Yeah, I somehow forgot about that. Like, I just watched this again, but yeah. I think in the, like, when it does slow down to like do character stuff here, I think a lot of that stuff, I don't know. I think it's like them talking about their plans, like trying to figure out what they're going to do is well done. Them kind of like coming to accept the fact of what this might be that they're dealing with. Like, just the whole idea, like, if this is a if these are werewolves, then what do we got to do? Are these really werewolves? Like, just kind of that whole thing, like that whole, like the dialogue between the soldiers and stuff in this rest of the movie, I think is good. It's fun. There's a part where one of the soldiers goes into a barn to get a Land Rover started. And when he finally starts the car, the lights come on and there's a wolf in the barn. He's eating his buddy's throat.
Yeah.
And he rips the dude's head off and throws it at the soldier in the truck. That was cool. I don't know. Like,
yeah, it's a good scene.
Finally, like, you know, you don't get a good look at the werewolves until they're in the house here. When you finally do, I think they look pretty cool. I don't know. Like, it's guys in suits, basically, but I think it looks neat. I don't know.
They're not bad. Like, I mean, they're guys in suits, but like the wolf heads look really good.
They just look gigantic. They look like. I mean, they're supposed to be, I think, like 7 feet tall.
Yeah, they look much taller. Yeah, they're very tall. They look threatening. Enough, right?
And I think, like, you know, Marshall does a good job of shooting them. Like, he lets you see them for sure, but it's always like, he does a lot of like hands coming through the windows too, where it's like you're just seeing a little bit, you know.
And the claws are well done. And,
yeah. Big things that happen. You find out that the team that was out there training was bait, and the elite. I guess they finally get Captain Ryan to say this, right? Like,
yep.
Basically, they were using them as bait, and the elite team was trying to capture these werewolves to use them as weapons of war.
It's always stupid. Like,
yeah.
Like, why would you get, like, oh, it's like trying to catch a fucking alien and use that. Like, come on now. Like, you can't control these things.
They also begin to realize that the farmhouse that they're holed up in is like, it's the wolf's house, which kind of like, I kind of did see coming, because you are kind of like, where are the owners of this house the whole time? And then you're like, oh, I guess that makes sense. Like, we're in their house. So we're definitely fucked now. Sarge gets better and better as it goes along. And he starts to realize that means he's infected with werewolf ism.
Sure. Yeah.
This exchange where he like realizes this is one of my favorite parts of the movie, and it's another one of the things that like stuck with me all these years. When he's like, I don't know, like, he's like, maybe it's like when you gotta take a piss, when you gotta go, you gotta go, you know. And like, you know, saying like, when I start to transform, I won't have any control over it. You know what I mean? You're going to have to fucking kill me or whatever.
Right.
And Coop is like, you know, what if it's like when you need to take a shit? Like, you could hold it for a little bit if you need to. Like, I just always thought that was an interesting exchange of dialogue. Like, using going to the bathroom to explain what it's like to turn into a werewolf. Also, I think in the same part, like, you get the Sarge saying, like, when I signed my life away on that dotted line, I meant it. I'm a fucking professional soldier. Like, that whole, like, macho war thing, I think is fun here. And it just, again, like, it goes with the music and kind of like the whole, like, war movie Under Siege thing. I just think it's, like, a good mix of, like, the manly, heroic war movie and the 7-foot-tall werewolves coming in. And then we reach, like, I think we're getting close to the end here.
Pretty much. There's a big siege on the house. Like, they cut the power. The werewolves cut the power.
Yeah.
And there's a siege on the house. So, like, they kind of make a last-ditch stand and retreat.
The woman, Megan, she reveals that the barn they blew up had no wolves because she's a wolf. And it's just kind of a goofy turn. Like, it's a goofy, like, twist or reveal where it's like, oh, she is part of this wolf family. It's like, why did she try to help them then? Like, they try to write a line of dialogue.
I didn't really get sense. I didn't get her motivations here. Cause like, originally I thought you were here to help. Like, and like, she was trying to escape, but like, if you're also a werewolf, like, what are you doing? Like,
It's like she's like, she says, I didn't write down the line exactly, but she's like, I really thought this was going to be the time and that, like, I would escape this or whatever. But then, like, it just doesn't make sense. And then, like, then she just completely turns on them, though. And it's just like, okay, then you never meant to do anything here. But it is fun, you know, when she's revealing it, she gets these really fun, cheesy lines, like, she says, like, being nice to women will get you nowhere. Being nice to me will get you killed. I think she has a...
So bad.
It's goofy, but it's fun to me. Like, again, her motivations make no sense, but it's kind of fun when she finally turns on them. I think she even says to them, it's that time of the month. Like, it's just...
She does say that, yes. Yeah.
In the big siege here at the end, I really love the part with, like, Sarge in the closet with the glow stick in his mouth. And, like, I think we're shooting some of it from, like, below him and some of it from above him. Just an interesting camera angle and just, like, just the tension and, like, the craziness going down. Like, there's a dude downstairs fucking boxing the wolf. It's just fucking awesome. And I guess... What is it? The Sarge, like, kind of tells everyone to get out.
Yep.
He starts turning on all, like, the stove and letting the gas leak into the house. And he fucking blows the fucking place up after, like, I guess, like, kind of drawing all the wolves in.
Right. Which leaves, like, Cooper.
And werewolf version of the bad, you know, Sergeant Ryan or whatever.
Yep.
There's like a showdown fight between them. Like, I think Ryan at this point is like already impaled, so he's a pretty fucked up wolf. And I think that's when Cooper finds the letter opener that we see at the beginning, right?
Yep, the silver letter opener that you called it. It's going to come back.
So I think he stabs him with it and then blows his brains out. Like,
yep, I was like, all right. Let me try to figure out like what's happening here.
Maybe the rule is like once the silver letter opener has like damaged him, he like doesn't have as much power anymore.
Yeah, Like when I read the synopsis of it after watching it again, it's like, oh, he stabs him and that like gives him the opening because he's now hurt. So that gave him the ability to actually hurt him. Like mortally kill him. So,
And that's kind of it, right? Like that, yeah. That goes to the end credits and you get these, I think, pretty cool end credits with it has like black and white stills from the production. If you stick around and watch that, there is like a newspaper headline at some point that shows Cooper. And then with the headline in quotes, it says, "Werewolves ate my platoon."
Yeah, tabloid type.
Just kind of showing you that it would just become like a tabloid story. Yeah. And that's it. Like, I guess I'll let you speak on this first.
It's pretty simple. Like, it's simple concept. Well done execution. Generally enjoyable. It is low budget, but as you said, you know, like the suits for the werewolves look good. The action's well choreographed. They do the best they can with their low budget. So they're confined to a few rooms in a house.
Yeah.
For most of the back two thirds of this film, and the other third is just out in the woods somewhere. So
yeah,
not much going on set wise, but decent and entertaining. Like you, I enjoy the camaraderie that the troops had. There's good banter. They feel like they are part of a group that had been together and would be together for a while. So, that's enjoyable. Generally pretty good.
You want to throw a score on it?
I'm going to go with 6.
Okay.
It's fun. Fun little werewolf movie.
Yeah. I think, again, for me, it mostly holds up still. It is a pretty cheap-looking movie, and then also it has a very early 2000s look to it to me. Sure. Part of the look of the movie is it was, I guess, shot on Super 16 and then blown up to 35mm, and so, like, there's scenes where it just crazy-looking amount of grain on it.
Yeah.
I
think it adds a little bit of charm to it, though.
Oh, yeah. Some of the, like, if you like, the 70s horror and shit, like, I love that grain. This looks like early 2000s, though, for some reason to me, like, just the whole thing. And it's just, like, you could tell Marshall's working with a limited budget here, but he's, like, trying to do this, like, kind of more epic thing, and for the most part, works for me. Like, it's just, like, this lean, fun, kind of, like, genre mashup. Like, I really love that combination of like the small scale war drama mixed with like a monster movie. Like, I just think that's like a neat like mix that you don't get much, to the point where it's like when this came out, people were like, oh, this is the werewolf version of Predator, because again, it's not a thing that you get much. Like when Predator came out, I think people were like surprised by it, because they were just like, I thought we were watching some like going into the jungle war movie, and all of a sudden there's like this alien picking people off. It's like insane, you know?
And that's actually the, so you compared the troops to kind of like the Saving Private Ryan piece. Mm-hmm. That was kind of my feel, though. It was like, this is Neil Marshall's attempt at Predator. Like, I felt that, the camaraderie they had, the banter back and forth, felt very much like Predator.
Yeah,
like the early scenes in Predator before everyone dies.
It did feel to me, though, like after Saving Private Ryan, like war films were hot for a minute, and then you had like that Band of Brothers miniseries on HBO, and this movie Dog Soldiers comes out in that mix in that time.
Yeah, I'm sure it was certainly influenced by that.
Yeah, for sure. But for me, because of that combination, and I think that like the music does a lot to sell this movie, to make it feel epic, even though it doesn't have the budget. And Cooper, Megan, and Sarge, I think, are all characters that grew on me as the story went on. So
yeah.
There's goofy thing, like again, the thing with Megan where you're just like, what? Why did you do this?
Like, whatever. Somebody should have.
It's fun enough, and
you could have killed her off, and you didn't have to have her related to the werewolves in any way. It was a weird motivation.
All that said, I still really love this a lot, and I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. which, you know, that's high for we're using a 10-point scale. So,
I
still really like it a lot. Which I guess brings us to our other werewolf movie of the night.
It began in May. And every month after that, whenever the moon was full, it happened again. And again.
What was that?
It's over there.
Don't point that at me.
Nobody knew who or what was responsible.
Come on.
They only knew it had to be stopped. Now, from the master of mystery and suspense, Stephen King's Silver Bullet.
All right, Silver Bullet, Chris. It was written by Stephen King and is based on his novella, Cycle of the Werewolf.
Yes.
Directed by Dan Attias, who this is the only movie he's ever directed. But he did go on to do many TV credits. He did Miami Vice, a lot of episodes of that, 90210. He actually did a bunch of HBO shows. Like, he directed episodes of The Sopranos, 6 Feet Under. So he's gone on to a good career, but it's just really weird to me that this was it for feature films.
Yeah, it is weird.
I actually think, we'll get into this, I guess, but, like, I think that this movie... I don't know. Like, I don't get the lack of love for it, but came out in October 11th, 1985. So it was a fun little Halloween movie that year. Budget of $7 million. Box office of 5.4 in North America. And I guess 12.5 million worldwide. Sits at on Rotten Tomatoes, and I think this is a travesty, 45% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, majority of critics did not like it. On IMDb, it's at a 6.4, at Letterboxd, 3.2. Yeah, it just, for whatever reason, I don't understand it, 'cause I like this movie a lot.
I do wonder if, you know, it's a film from the 80s, like Rotten Tomatoes, you know, what they've pulled.
Yeah. It never really, just now it's starting to get some respect in, like, the horror community a little bit, but it's just, like, when I was a kid, I thought it was amazing, like, I loved it, and I assumed everyone else did, but it just doesn't seem that's the case. So anyways, this is a movie about a kid and his uncle trying to fight a werewolf. Very, in my opinion, very Stephen King feeling. You got that kind of small town thing going. You have alcoholism. You have a young boy trying to fight evil. I don't know. It feels like it touches a lot of classic King story tropes. And starts in the spring of 1976. And we're getting a voiceover from the main character's sister. Which I find kind of weird in this, but she's like, our nightmare began that summer. Cause she's not like the main character. The main character is Marty, played by, Corey Haim here. And, you know, his sister's in it a little bit and she's definitely there at the end when shit goes down, but it's like not her story.
In general, it's not. There is a major portion of the not a major portion, but some major scene where, you know, she is doing some investigation for Marty.
Yeah.
And she really finally, she finally comes across like what's actually going on.
But I'm just wondering why we're not hearing Marty. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I guess the best I could come up with is that allows them to like let you think that Marty might not make it.
Could like, be that. Being, like, I think it's also to kind of stress the discord between the two. early on, like they show the relationship not being.
Yeah.
Although it's not really her fault or his fault. It's just there's issues.
I you know what? It's one part of the movie that doesn't work for me completely, because like jumping ahead way ahead here to the very end, she gives this line about how like she wasn't always able to say that she loves him, and I'm just like, dude, he what? Like, I don't know. I think it's a little extreme, like the rift that they're trying to make between these two, because like. Although yeah. There's a part here at the very beginning where she's like, Marty was the cross I had to bear. I was like, geez. It's like, so Marty, our main character, he's wheelchair bound. I don't know that they ever, do they ever explain?
No, why? I don't think they go into why he is in a wheelchair.
But yeah, so he's, you know, he can't walk and he's stuck in his wheelchair. And I guess maybe that's part of why she views him as a cross to bear. But also, like, him and his friend play a prank on her. They try to scare her with a snake, and she falls in the mud, and she gets all pissed off and runs away. But then, like, Marty is, like, really sweet to her. Like, he's, like, doesn't he, like, give her money to replace
her? Yeah, it's a good scene, like, later that night.
Yeah.
He sneaks into her room, and... lays money on her counter, and she finally like she was faking being asleep, and she like,
yeah,
what's the money for? She's like, to buy herself some new pantyhose down at the corner store or whatever.
Yeah, and he's all like, please accept my apology. You know what I mean? Like doesn't seem like an awful brother. Like
no, he's like he kind of knows like I'm a burden. Like
yeah,
like,
not, yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, I'm an asshole, and I ruined your day, even though it wasn't really me, it was my friend, and as Mom said, there's nothing I could do to stop him from climbing in a tree with a fucking snake. Like,
yeah.
But
after, you know, when they pull this prank on her, she, like, runs off, and I guess it's important to note here, she, like, finds this couple fighting, and she sees, like, the woman saying, like, it's your baby or whatever. Like, nobody's helping me or whatever. Yes. That's important because that's going to be a thing that happens shortly. she does tell Marty that, that like, the uncle that he idolizes is a drunk and he's getting divorced again. I think that's in the scene where he's trying to apologize to her and give her the money. But that's kind of setting up the character played by Gary Busey here.
Yes. So go ahead. So right before that, like when they're at the car, when she's getting him out of the car.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
That's when she lays in that, like,
you know, get back to the house.
Or, uncle, your favorite uncle is a drunk and he's getting divorced again. Like snotty, like, oh, like you just want to smack the shit out of that kid. And then like when he, you know, he apologizes, she feels bad and you know, he asks like, were you really telling the truth about Uncle Red? And she's like, yeah, but I shouldn't have told you that way. It was mean.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. It's like a realistic kind of relationship between brother and sister.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't think that it's any more awful than any brother and sister like relationship. No.
Not really.
She kind of tries to, like, in the narration, make it sound like it was terrible. Like, I don't know. They seem like they were loving to each other. And we'll get to Uncle Red in a minute. But after this, we cut to the pregnant lady taking pills to commit suicide. And she, like, makes some remark about how suicides go to hell, especially when they're pregnant, but I don't care.
Yep.
The wolf busts in through her window and kills her. I guess it kind of plays into the explanation for the werewolf later and who he's trying to choose as his victims, as people that he views as sinners. I mean, we're doing full spoilers on this, so.
Sinners in need of redemption.
Yeah. Marty has like a little girl he's got a crush on or whatever. He brings her home, and her dad, who is like another drunk adult in this, he seems like a real nice dad.
He seemed like he's a jackass.
He's one that you like want him to get it like right away. Like he's the bad drunk.
Yeah, you know. He makes a comment that is like, I want to punch you in the face.
When he's damn cripples, they always end up on wall. Yeah,
yep, that was it. I was like, fuck you, dude. Like you're a prop. Look at you.
Probably taking money from the government. Right,
exactly.
Marty has this sweet motorized wheelchair that I guess his uncle made him, and we find out like his uncle's working on a new. It has like a little sign on the back of it called Silver Bullet, which you know they call the wheelchair the Silver Bullet, which is where we get the title from. But of course, obviously, that's what you need to kill a werewolf,
right?
We cut to Marty playing cards with his uncle. Played by Busey, and this is, I think, the first time we see Busey.
Yes.
He's drunk, he's drinking Wild Turkey, he's telling bar jokes to Marty, and the mom is, like, standing in the kitchen behind all this, like, clearly not happy. I think she finally comes in at some point, she's like, all right, that's enough, you know, and she makes Marty go to bed, and once Marty's upstairs, she, like, yells at her brother, yells at Uncle Red, just saying, like, she doesn't want him, like, drunk around Marty like that, and you know, just not wanting, I guess, Marty exposed to that, but, like, I so side with Uncle Red in the scene. Well,
yeah, he comes off, like, one, he comes off as, all right, yes, he's a drunk. He understands that he's a drunk and probably a loser, but also, like, look, your kid is way more than just the cripple that you're projecting on him. He could be whatever he wants, like, and like I'm here to boost his confidence, like.
And it's like I could get where the mom is like thinking like, yeah, it must be fun for you to just show up and be the cool uncle and not have to like deal with the reality of raising Marty and this and that. Like you get to be the cool guy who comes and plays games and brings him presents and all that, but like I don't know, I ultimately side with Uncle Red. Like he's right, like you're looking at him as just, you're letting his disability be like the way that the thing that defines him, and Uncle Red's like, no, he's just a regular little boy too, like, you know. And I just like, I think that like I really like the relationship between Uncle Red and Marty in this, and like, yeah, he's a drunk, but like he's never abusive. He's always very sweet with Marty. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't.
Yes. But he also realizes that he's the adult. Like, I think that's yeah. Because like sometimes they play these adult relationships up with their, you know, nieces or nephews. Like, I'm going to be your best friend. Like, no, like he realizes there's a line. Like he is the fun uncle, but there's also a line where it's like, I am an adult. And yeah, you're gonna listen to me now, like.
But is it part? How are we supposed to take it that he like embarks on this mission with them? Is it like the irresponsible drunk uncle just kind of going along finally because he's a fuck up, or is it just because he's listening and the kids were right?
I think it's more like he's listening, but yeah, like, nobody's gonna believe. Like, I think he realizes his failings too, right? Like. He knows that everyone views him as the town drunk. No one's going to believe him.
Yeah, that's a great. Yeah, isn't there a part where he goes to the police station to explain everything that's going on? And the guy's like, "Do you believe all this?" And he's like, "I'm just saying, I think you should look into the priest, right?" Like,
yeah.
and we'll get into the identity of the werewolf here in a minute, but anyways, we cut back to the. But I just want to say, like, that scene with, like, when we're introduced to Uncle Red in the house and they're playing cards or whatever, I think that's really, like, kind of, like, the heart of the film. Like, you end up really liking and caring about both those characters, and I think that's what, like, really carries this thing. This movie that I think is underrated. But, anyways, after that scene, though, we cut to the drunk bean dad of that girl, and he like goes out to his greenhouse or whatever because he hears shit going on. right? Isn't it like a greenhouse or like a shed or something?
Yeah, it's a greenhouse or something. Like she had made mention that she's heard noises coming from the shed before.
Okay.
And he hears something out there, so he like grabs a shotgun, walks out. I guess some sort of greenhouse garden type thing going on.
Anyways, he gets impaled on with a floorboard by the wolf. And now we have a couple like murders have happened now. I think I forgot to mention the one at the beginning where it's like this guy working on the train tracks and everyone assumes that like he fell asleep. Like, another drunk in this movie fell asleep on the train tracks and got his head cut off by a train.
Yep.
But now you get this guy dead, and the girl who was going to commit suicide, she's dead, and now this town starts freaking out. You get a nice little like mini montage of this. Like they just show like gun sales going on in the town. The mayor is like putting pressure on the cops to solve this thing. You get shots of like people going in when it starts to turn dark. Like everyone kind of like goes into their home. It like kind of conveys this all pretty quickly, like in like a minute or so.
Yeah, it's very very well done too. Like it, like the town's in panic. Everyone's very cautious. So, like you have an understanding of what the nature of the town is at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like it's crazy because like. I'm trying to take like detailed notes because, I'm presenting these movies and it's like the movie kind of moves so quick that it was hard for me to keep up with like, okay, what's going on now? We get people at the, like hanging out at the local bar, criticizing the police. And it's funny because like there's one cop who's always there drinking. So you just get people like yelling at him, like, how come you haven't fucking solved this yet? And he's just like, I'm trying to drink. The bartender, I don't know if you noticed, he's like the leader in Reservoir Dogs. He's like the guy that gives them.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. He's got like a baseball bat too that says the Peacemaker on it.
Yep.
Which gets used later. We get another murder. Marty's friend Brady stays out after dark one night. Like they're like, playing with a kite, and Marty goes home and this kid stays out and he's murdered.
Which does break the, the chain there.
What the fuck did? Saying like.
It's right, like kid. Like, yeah, like what? Like everybody else. Like not that they deserve to die, but like. There's an understanding, like, right?
He's trying to pick people that.
Yeah, the dad's an asshole. He's bad to his daughter, bad to his wife. Like, he needs to go because he needs redemption. The lady was going to kill herself. She'd go to hell. She needs redemption. The guy's a drunk. And he's drunk on the job and could probably get somebody hurt. He needs redemption. What the fuck does this, like, 12-year-old kid do? Like, he just wrong place, wrong time, I guess.
And we get a very distraught father who like finds the boy in the gazebo all murdered, and we got a funeral scene where Busey's thinking about drinking in the church. He like grabs his bottle out of his pocket, thinks twice, puts it back in. We get the priest saying a line here: "The face of the beast always becomes known," which is interesting when. You find out later that he is the beast. It's like, okay. I also, just because I've mentioned it a couple times now, the priest is the bad guy. He's the werewolf in this.
Yes.
He's played by Everett McGill, I think is the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Who I saw recently in Twin Peaks. I started watching Twin Peaks, the TV show. He's one of the characters in that. When I was a kid, I thought Everett McGill was the dude from Talking Heads. I thought he was David Byrne. Like, I don't know why. I thought it looked like him and was like, oh, it's the guy from Talking Heads is in this. Also, when I was a kid, the reveal that it was the priest was, like, mind-blowing to me. I'm a little, like, I was, like, 7 or 8 years old when I first saw this.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah.
It was just, like, I didn't know that was a thing that was possible, that priests could be bad. She goes to Shaw naive. I was priest can be bad.
But at seven, that makes sense. Like, yeah. You don't have any understanding of.
I didn't have bad priests when I went to.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, that was like a mind blowing reveal when I was a kid. I do think they kind of like tipped their, like watching it now, I think they kind of tipped their hand a little early that it's him when they didn't need to. Anyways, after the funeral, there's a scene with Marty, like kind of driving with his uncle back from it, and they're talking about what's going on. And Marty's like, "What if it's not a wolf that's killing people? What if it's some kind of monster like a werewolf?"
Yeah.
Busey like laughs it off. He insists it's it's a human. It's a psycho. Which is just, I think they do a good job of like slowly getting Busey on board, where he's like at first just like, no, like, you guys are nuts. Like, there's a great, we'll get to it later, there's a great line later when he tells them they're nuts, like him and his sister. But people at the bar start forming like a Halloween 4 vigilante group where they're like, fucking, we gotta go out and kill this thing on our own. Like, it very much reminds me of Halloween 4.
Very much, yeah.
The police come in and tell them not to do that, and then
also, I don't know, just a weird scene in the fact that like the cop, he's going through like talking about how like, you know, we can't have public justice, I think is what he calls it.
Yeah.
And he's talking about like, you know, you keep going down this path, there's going to be hanging and lynching. And like, he's walking by like the lone black guy in the fucking movie.
Yeah.
Like, all right, that was heavy handed.
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're going for, but yeah, then like Brady's dad makes this speech about how he lost his son and fucking that just like the basically like overrules what the police were saying.
Yeah.
And then everyone, like the mob is on the move. Everyone runs out. And actually like what I noticed this time is I just love the shot of everyone running out of this bar, like just wonderful lighting. Like it's shot at dusk and you kind of have like the neon sign of the bar. Kind of,
there's a nice glow there, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's like a laundromat or something across the street that's like kind of like glowing green inside. Like, I don't know, I just thought it was there's like a good, I don't know, it has that good like summertime, like it's about to be sunset vibe. And yep. One of my favorite things about this movie, like watching it now and trying to take notes about like what I like about it and shit, is like it's a strong like summer vibe movie. Like, it just feels like summer in a small town. Like, there's a part later where they're like blowing off fireworks and having a cookout in the yard, and it just feels, I don't know, it's like a fun,
yeah.
I remember like when I watched it last year when I got the special edition of the Blu-ray, like I was watching it last summer, and I was like, man, this is like a great summer horror movie. Anyways, the mob goes out and fucking gets completely like destroyed by the wolf who's like stalking them in the fog.
What's funny about that is like, so right before, like, you know, they all leave the bar,
yeah,
and the reverend, the priest, he comes up, he's like, no, like don't do this, don't do, like he's trying to tell them like, don't go out, you're gonna get hurt.
Because yeah,
I'm gonna hurt you,
I'm gonna come out and kill you.
And like he's like, it's great, it's a good, really good scene.
He takes the bartender's bat and beats him to death with a peacemaker.
Yeah. Yes.
Then you get like an absurd scene of a funeral with like just like four bodies in this funeral. And it turns out to be like this insane dream that the priest is having where everyone turns into wolves, like all the people that are sitting there watching or whatever, like they all turn into wolves. Hilarious, like laugh out loud shot of this wolf playing an organ and like looking over their shoulders as they bang away at the keys. Or like, I was just like, what the fuck? Like, it literally made me laugh out loud. But I think that's kind of where it's like, if you didn't include this scene, which I remember hearing crazy stories about them shooting, like it was like 900 degrees when they were shooting it, and everyone was like wearing all this fucking shit. Yeah.
Werewolf suits.
Yeah, I when I watched like the special features when I first got the Blu-ray, I remember them talking about what a nightmare shooting the nightmare scene was. I forgot the exact details now, but I'm like, you could have left this out because it kind of like points to him feeling guilty. And it's like, I mean, I guess it's not long after you find out it's him, but I just feel like, why?
It's interesting in contrast to the book, where where the letters that we'll get to in a minute, the letters that are being mailed to him, that's kind of what is driving him to feel guilty in the book. So it's interesting that, that they have him feeling guilty before, you know, before Marty and Jane figure it out.
Now we get the scene I kind of touched on, like, Red gives Marty the new silver bullet he made. He goes for a ride with it, and there's like this super 80s theme plays while he's riding the silver bullet. It's cheesy and kind of sticks out now, but I also like it lets you know this is a 1985 movie, and to me it's just part of the charm. It's part of what makes me love it. Like, it's just ridiculous. That's when they have, after that, they like grill out and they have dinner outside. Like I said, you get that great summer vibe. Red takes him aside and gives Marty fireworks. And he says, you're going to have 4th of July, but you're going to have it in September. And I love this line. He's like, remember, it isn't just fireworks. It's so no crazy shed can stop the good guys. Which is like, what he's saying is like, we're not going to let... Basically, we're not going to let the terrorists win.
Yeah,
you know, like
except in 1985.
Yeah, you're gonna get to have your 4th of July, even though it got canceled this year because of the fucking werewolf. But it's also like a you can take it another way when you find out what Marty does with the fireworks.
Yeah,
because you know he says it's so no crazy shit can stop the good guys. Well, shortly thereafter. Marty makes that literal because he sneaks off in the middle of the night and he goes off to this wooden bridge and he's like shooting off fireworks by himself, like, you know, middle of the night. And of course the werewolf comes and he shoots the werewolf in the eye with one of the bottle rockets or whatever. And so now the werewolf was marked. We know that he has like a missing or injured eye, like, I guess missing, because the fucking thing goes straight into his fucking eye.
Yep.
And so he sends, like, his sister goes out all over town, like, the next day, I guess, or whatever, looking for someone with one eye. She's, like, collecting bottles and cans for recycling from everybody. And she goes last, she goes to turn them in at the church or whatever, and we see the reverend with the patch over his eye. We see that, I think, before her. She goes into his, like, garage or whatever, where all the cans are stored, and she sees the peacemaker in there. And then she starts to put it together, and he comes up to talk to her, and then she sees his eye with the patch over it. He notices that she's scared right away, so he knows he's been made. She goes back and tells Marty that, like, it's him, and that the grown-ups won't believe them. So Marty comes up with the brilliant plan of sending a ransom note basically to a note, like, you know, like with like the letters cut out from a magazine.
Yeah.
And it basically says, like, we know who you are. Like, why don't you kill yourself? Just like, I don't know if you expected that plan to work, Marty, but it doesn't.
So no, it just pisses him off.
Yeah, well, like, dude, why don't you kill yourself? I mean, I'm sure if he was willing to do that, he'd thought of it already. It's just like they have no sort of leverage over this werewolf, but they're like, why don't you kill yourself? I mean, I guess they know who he is, but again, getting anyone to believe them. Anyway, so they decide, since their letter writing campaign is not working, they decide to tell Red. He is not fucking happy. It's like a scene with them in a park, like on a park bench. And he's just like, I think he says to Marty, sometimes I think your common sense got paralyzed along with your legs. Jesus Christ. It's a little harsh. But yeah, he basically tells them that they sound insane. And she's like, the sister's like, I'll show you. I think she says she'll show him like the bat right now that he has in his in the recycling shed or whatever. They go to spy on the priest. They continue to work on Red and like try to convince him. But then later, Marty's riding his wheelchair by himself. The priest tries to run him off the bridge. Starts chasing him.
It's an absurd scene.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like crazy, like just like chasing with a wheelchair and a car, like kind of insane. Corners him on like closed, covered bridge, and he's like, "I don't want to do this, Marty." And that's where he gets to the line where he explains that like he's only killing people who sinned. Luckily, Marty is saved here by like some guy that like drives by on a tractor, and Marty like screams for help, and it scares him off. But this is after this is when Red starts to believe them. He sees the damage to the silver bullet, and he sees the blue paint from the priest's car. And he starts to believe them, and that's when we get the scene that we already touched on. He goes to the police and tries to tell them, at least check out the Reverend or whatever.
Right, and at that point, that sheriff is like, "Fuck, I'll do anything at this point."
Yeah, yeah. Get a great scene where he goes up to the Reverend's house just smoking a cigarette. Like, I just thought it, like another thing that kind of dates is it's like no cop would walk up to your house smoking a cigarette, like, just knocking on the door. Hey, can I come in? And you know, he does get to talk to the priest who says it's not his fault, and then he beats the cop to death with the bat. I did have a note here. I'm like, why does this werewolf kill so many people with a baseball bat? Like, he's a werewolf. He's got claws and teeth and stuff. Like, we should be seeing more like
people he's getting bludgeoning their heads people.
Yeah. So once they finally have sort of convinced Red of what's going on, Marty asks him to make a silver bullet. We get an awesome like little montage of the silver, like him bringing it to this like fucking, I don't know, some guy that fucking like blacksmith guy. Like an awesome little montage of it being built with voiceover about like he was a master craftsman or whatever. Yeah. Like I was like, I don't know. It always like I always find it super enjoyable every time, even though it's like
it's ridiculous. Funny too. He's like, and he knows about like the occult or something like that. Yeah. Too. And it's like, and he actually makes it so you want a silver bullet to kill werewolves.
Yeah. And then we get the big showdown. Like, then it's just like, I guess the parents leave town or something.
Red sends them on a vacation.
Yeah. And I don't, are they hanging at Marty's house or are they at Red's? I can't.
They're at Marty's house, yeah.
Okay. So Red's like staying with kids, and like they stay up all night waiting for the werewolf to show up. But I just love that like idea. I don't know. It just goes back to like you have to remember this is a very much like I think it's a very good movie that holds up now. But like try to put yourself in the mindset of seeing this as a kid. Like the idea of having to stay up all night and you're waiting for like the monster to show up. I just thought was so cool when I was a kid.
Yeah.
They wait forever. The wolf like does not show up. Red like passes out drunk. I don't know. Was he? I think he's probably drinking. He's always drinking.
No, he says he's sober.
Is he sober in that? Yeah, he does sober. Pass out in the chair though, right? Like he's yes. Like he finally like he's finally like, all right, this is where maybe I let these kids get in my head.
Well, no, yeah, and when he wakes up, he's like, all right, you guys got to go to bed. I'll stay up because I said I'd stay up.
Right? Yeah. He wakes up at 3 a.m. and he tells them, all right, guys, time to wrap it up, go to bed. I'll stay up and I'll watch just because I said I would, blah, blah, blah. And then the wolf shows up outside the window. And we get the kind of like big showdown. I actually stopped taking notes here because I just get so into like this ending. There's kind of like I think when the wolf shows up, he had taken the bullet out of the gun and he was like, this is bullshit, or he's like holding. And when the wolf's like, so then when he like shows up, he like drops the bullet, Red does, and it falls into like a vent in the floor or whatever. Yep. So they have to like fish the bullet out, kind of suspenseful or whatever. But they get, you know, in the nick of time, they get the bullet back in the gun, they shoot the wolf, I think, right in the other eye.
Yes, but that's after the wolf throws Red across the fucking room upside down. It's hysterical.
And then, you know, he collapses to the floor and dies, but as he's like dying, he like reverts back to human form. And you get a cool, I thought, like, it worked for me when I was a kid. I think it still works pretty well. Like, yeah. Reverse transformation scene.
Where he's, yeah, just, like, it still looks pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, like, you get to see, like, all, like, the little hairs actually going back into his, like, you know, he's got crazy hair because he's a wolf. And it's kind of like they're all kind of going back in. And his face flattens back out to a human face. And then you just get this corpse lying there. And then you get, like, and I, in my opinion, like, at that point, I'm like, all right, how are they going to explain? They got the dead priest in their house and this and that. Like, I thought there would be more at the end, and it just comes to, like Marty just, I think, makes this joke about how he can't walk.
Yeah.
They're like, are you okay, Marty? He's like, yeah, except for one thing. I don't think I could walk. And then they all, like, laugh, like, ha, 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 ha.
That's just over.
Yeah, and then just like ends. It's just, it just feels very kind of abrupt. And also we get like the one more voiceover, you know, from his sister, and she's just like, I love you, Marty. I wasn't always able to say that, but I can now. I'm like, what, because a werewolf attacked you guys? Like, I don't understand. Like, I just feel like they weren't totally sure how to end it, and they just said fuck it, like, the werewolf's dead, so the end. It doesn't diminish my love for this movie. I like it quite a bit, as I've made clear, but you are seeing this for the first time, so yeah. Interested to hear more of your thoughts on Silver Bullet.
Yeah, first time I've seen it. I have read Cycle of the Werewolf, which is done like the same murders kind of take place, but they're done from different perspectives. So, like, you get the lady who was pregnant and was going to commit suicide. You get the murder from her perspective.
Okay.
So, like, each one goes, and there's two that are from, I guess, from Marty's perspective, as opposed to the whole film being from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is fun. Like, you know, Corey Haim, very good in it.
Yeah.
He's a good child actor. Gary Busey, also really good in it. Like, and their relationship, as you said, is kind of the core here. If they don't work, this movie doesn't work.
Yeah.
But they're fun and they're enjoyable. You know, the Reverend Lowe as the killer and werewolf, very well done. I do find it weird that, like, so, like, one of the core conceits in the book is that when he becomes a werewolf, it's this curse, and he's trying to, you know, he can't really control it, but he's trying to kill people that need to be,
yeah,
need to be saved, as opposed to here, like, they make the priest into, like, a legitimate villain. Like, he is chasing down Marty, like,
yeah,
trying to kill him in broad daylight.
Well, it's like, not once a werewolf. Once his identity is threatened, like, it's like, once there's the threat that he could be found out, I guess that's kind of what triggers it more. But I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and I get, like, why you need to do it that way. Cause in the book, it's, you know, they focus a little bit on some different things, and,
yeah,
you know, there's more focus paid to the letter writing and how that affects the priest there. Here you need to speed it up a little bit, because it's only an hour and a half. Like, it's not a long, yeah, movie. So you need to get some conflict there. I think it does a good job. I think for the most part, the kills for 1985, for a movie where the, you know, main villain is a dude in a suit, they do some good stuff. Like that first kill with not the first kill with the one where they, you know, kills the pregnant lady, like, you're seeing the claw scratch at her, and you're seeing,
yeah, I do think the very first kill is pretty fun, because you get a fucking decapitated head. That's always a, yeah, plus in my book, like the guy on the train tracks. I did it. One of my notes was that the fucking werewolf looks like Altered Beast in this. Like,
a little bit, yeah.
It's just, I do think, like, if we're rating which werewolf looks better, I do think Dog Soldiers kind of wins for me.
Oh, for sure. It also comes almost 20 years later.
But... Yeah, yeah. But I do think that this has good effects. Like we said, like the transformation, like the reverse transformation.
Very well done.
Yeah.
I like the swamp scene too, which like where, you know, a lot of the townsfolk get killed when they're out on that hunt. But it's like, you know, well done, very foggy. You can't see things. So the tension builds up, you know, some comedic humor with like the older guy and his wife there. And she makes a comment about like him, like, are you going to piss your pants or something? So like some good banter, like just, I don't know. It's, as you said, kind of like a fun summer movie. I think it hits a lot of the night. It's entertaining throughout the entire thing. Yeah, I really, really, really liked it.
All right, rating.
I'm gonna give it 7 out of 10.
All right. Yeah, dude, I love this movie. It's just such a Stephen King story. Like, it just feels like Stephen King to me. It feels like that classic era of Stephen King.
Small town,
Maybe when it came out, like, Stephen King was so, like, between Carrie and this, like, he was just, like, every horror movie coming out was Stephen King for a while. Yeah. Maybe people were sick of it at this point. I don't know. But, like, it is more minor than, like, this isn't Pet Sematary or Carrie. It's just a fun little werewolf movie. But it contains so much of what I like about King. I think the relationship between Marty and Red is just the heart of this movie and what makes it work. I'm going to say this. I think Gary Busey has never been better than in this movie. I think this is his best role. If I'm missing something, let me know. But I think he's like really good in here as Uncle Red. Like, just very, flawed, but very likable in this. Not super insane.
yeah,
and it's just I guess, you know, part of it too is it's just nostalgia for me because I've always liked this movie since I was a kid, but I do think it holds up watching it now. Great summer vibe, like, again, probably my favorite werewolf movie. So it comes as no surprise that I'm rating this a little higher than Dog Soldiers. I'm gonna give Silver Bullet an 8. I'm going to go that far for it. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. So I think we're both in agreement, that it sounds like, because you rated it higher.
I like Silver Bullet a little bit more than Dog Soldiers. But both were enjoyable werewolf movies.
And, you know, yeah, I know you've read, you know, you read what it was adapted from, but, like, you know, you have no nostalgia for this movie. You're seeing it for the first time, which blows my mind. So I guess it does hold up, though, for someone who's watching it new.
Yeah, I think it's super fun. Like, I could see somebody that doesn't like kids in movies not liking this, because they're the main focus. Like, Marty is the main focus here. So if, like, you're not a fan of kids in films, then this isn't going to work for you. But I, you know, it works. Like, Stephen King understands how to write children and how to portray them. So I think he does a good job here.
So, yeah, we both enjoyed Silver Bullet is going to win here over Dog Soldiers. We did, of course, do our online polls. So on Twitter, only got 6 votes total, but the way it broke down was 67% went for Silver Bullet, agreeing with us, versus 33% for Dog Soldiers. On Facebook, a lot more votes. Silver Bullet got 39 votes for 57%, and Dog Soldiers got 29 votes for 42%.
Okay. So
all across the board, normally I would put both polls together to give the final results of the online polls, but it didn't matter because you and I both agree Silver Bullet wins here. Twitter agrees. Facebook agrees. Everywhere you looked, people went with 1985 Silver Bullet finally getting its due.
There you go.
A movie I also love. Like, I love Dog Soldiers too, but I just, there's a little more heart to Silver Bullet, and it's a little bit more of a comfort food for me. So
it's a little more fun too, just like in general. Yeah. As you said, kind of comfort food. So.
So that wraps up our big werewolf episode. Chris, what are we doing in episode 13?
Killer clothes.
Oh, no.
So I've been waiting for a movie for a while now. Since last year, I saw a trailer for a movie about killer jeans called Slacks.
Yeah.
And it has hit Shudder. It is out now on Shudder. So we're going to watch Slacks from 2020. And then I needed something to pair with that. And there's a movie, so not too far apart here. This is from 2018, but it is a movie called In Fabric, which is a movie about a killer dress. And that is available on Amazon. You can rent it on like just about any service. Okay. But, it's also available if you have there's a service called Canopy, which if you have a library card and your library participates, you can access it through there. So
okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
What is that one called again?
In Fabric. In Fabric. Yeah.
Okay.
That's about a killer dress. I was gonna pair this with the killer couch movie you mentioned, but I thought killer clothes, and this one, In Fabric, has a much better score than the killer couch movie
did. Okay, I've heard good things about Slacks. To be honest, I was giving you shit when I kind of heard that you were gonna do Slacks as one of your movies. So I was just like, oh god, you're torturing me. But I've seen actually positive reaction to Slacks, so. I just also part of it for me is like it's so rare that a Shudder original is actually any good. Sure. I don't know if it's a Shudder original or Shudder exclusive, but a lot of times they don't live up to that.
I don't think it's exclusive to Shudder, but it is available on there, and I think it is a Shudder original. Yes.
Yeah. So a lot. Oftentimes, at least for me, that they like never live up to the hype, but. I've heard good things. It's got a crazy, goofy, like kind of thumbnail when you scroll over it on like this girl just getting strangled by a pair of jeans.
And the poster's great. It's just a girl in like it's her butt in jeans. Like I get behind that any time of the week. So,
yeah, we'll be back next month with Killer Clothes. Yep. Well, thanks for listening and get excited.